I forgot to put the microphone on. After the thunder, I was going to go, ooh, welcome to our speaker. But there was no microphone on. Anyway, guys, welcome to our Fenlake campfire. We're going to be telling you some spooky stories today. I've got Chase and Harvey with me.
Hello.
No nonsense there. Hello. Who would like to go first?
Me, to get it undone.
Okay. Oh, God.
Okay.
That sounds bad, doesn't it?
So, over to Chase with his spooky story.
My one's titled The Last Laugh at the Lumiere Theatre.
Ooh, Lumiere.
Nonchalant. That's a restaurant, yeah. Chase wasn't scared of much. He performed for drunk crowds, hostile hecklers, and once an entire bachelor party dressed as clowns. So when his tour manager said, tonight's venue is Lumiere Theatre, supposedly haunted, Chase just grinned, perfect. He said, if the ghosts heckle me, at least they will be quieter than the last night's crowd. The theatre was ancient, velvet curtains that looked like they hadn't been cleaned since the 1800s, portraits that followed you with their eyes, they went Specsavers, and a faint smell of ghosts and regret.
What do ghosts smell like?
I'm just reading that.
Like dust.
Dust. The stage manager, a pale man who blinked once every 2 minutes, warned him, don't mention the Phantom of Roji. He doesn't like jokes about him. Well, I ain't got any, so he's lucky.
Well, why tell you that then? You wouldn't know.
Exactly, yeah. Chase laughed. Buddy, I am the joke.
That is a joke.
I mean, I don't know if I'm getting the hints. Thanks, AI.
Don't tell people it's AI. We wrote them.
I'm just joking about the AI part. The stage manager didn't laugh. He just whispered, break a leg.
I will find you.
Ooh. Liam Neeson?
It sounded more like Yoda.
Yoda! In the tone that sounded less supportive and more prophetic.
Prophetic.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Showtime. The crowd was packed, or so it looked. Halfway through his set, Chase noticed something odd. The front row wasn't clapping at all. Why am I turning into Joanna Lumley?
Joanna Lumley? Oh.
Try again, darling.
Patsy. That was more like a female David Attenborough.
He squinted onto the lights. They were grey, light grayscale grey, and slightly transparent. Hey, Chase said, if your ghosts blink twice, they all blinked in unison. The audience roared with laughter. Well, I hope so. Except Chase, who realised only half the crowd were actually alive.
Ooh.
Oh, now we're getting somewhere.
He tried to play it off. So, anyone dating tonight? Anyone from this century? A cold breeze swept across the stage. His mic flickered, then a raspberry voice, raspy, raspberry voice.
That sounds sweet.
Good job he's not diabetic. From the balcony said, "Do the one about a graveyard." My uncle was in at the time. Chase froze. "That's not my set list." "It's now." Not sorry, Frank, that's what he was there at the time too. He was a ghost. The ghost heckler was strong. No, the ghost heckler was, yeah, strong material, though the crowd loved it. Chase leaned in, determined to own the moment.
To own the moment, there's Joanna Lumley again.
The great way journeys with Joanna. What was that? Oh, you want graveyard humour? My career is buried here. After the show, the manager found Chase in the dressing room. Pale and shaky.
Oh.
Because he hadn't had no coffee. Sorry, no. "Great set," the man said. "The ghost loved you. Haven't you heard the laughter?" "I haven't heard the laughter like that here in decades." Weeks later, Chase got his tour schedule for next season. His next gig, return to Lemire Theatre.
Ooh.
One night only. And train tickets are available. At the bottom of the email was a note. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Wait, is the last page missing?
Oh, no.
That'd be a cliffhanger, wouldn't it?
"Special request. The Phantom of Roji insists you open with a graveyard joke."
Ooh. Not again.
And in the corner of his dressing room, a mirror that night, when Chase looked again, someone had already written his punchline in the fog. And the words were, "You killed it, Chase. Don't stop now."
Ooh.
Thank you for listening.
Dun, dun, dun. Yay, that was good.
Thank you.
Later, I would like to hear a joke about a graveyard, though.
I've got them all buried on my phone. They're dead and buried.
I'll accept that. Okay. So. Chase has gone mad.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Joe Barnes. I've got to buy me
Darren. Oh, the HEJC.
I'm diabetic, Darren. Who's next?
Harvey's going next.
Oh, okay.
With a nice short but sweet, well, I don't think it's sweet, short but spooky story.
So Robert Davis is in a Halloween costume.
Take it away, Harvey!
And no, I won't be apologising.
Harvey always loves trains. The clatter of the wheel, the hiss of the steam, the echoes of the whistle in the night. So he heard about the abandoned silver line, which I've never heard before.
A silver mine?
A silver line.
Oh, yeah, well, it's abandoned.
That ran through the old forest. He couldn't resist sneaking a look. Definitely not. Under a full moon, he found the rusted tracks swallowed by fog. Then faint at first came the sound of a whistle. The train, glowing faintly blue, rolled out of the mist. Its windows flickered with ghostly light. Inside sat passengers made of shadow, staring straight ahead. Which is weird.
Spooky.
Curiosity won over fear. Harvey stepped on board. The door hissed shut, and the train lurched forward through the fog windows. He saw flash memories seen from lives long ago, soldiers waving goodbye, children's clutching cases, lovers parting forever. An old conductor appeared beside him, eyes pale as smoke. "End of a line, lad," he said softly. "No passengers beyond this point."
Ooh.
Heart pouncing, Harvey leapt from the slow train just before it vanished into darkness, taking its silent passengers with it. The next morning, when the sun burned away the fog, all that remained were the tracks, and Harvey's own ticket crumbled dust into hand.
Good job, Harvey.
Good job, mate.
I never knew what the silver line was before, but
I think maybe it's just like a made-up train line.
Yeah,
just probably. For the story. It was a bit like Polar Express-y. I like that.
Yeah.
Like maybe if he'd stayed on the train, he'd ended up at the North Pole. That was really good, Harvey. Thank you. Would you like me to do the last one?
If you want to, yeah. That's good.
This one is called The Haunted Airbnb.
Did you get your breakfast in the morning?
Well, we're
falling down. Close was close.
Neil was the one who found the place. "It's rustic," he said. "It's cheap," replied Nadine. "It's haunted," Andy muttered after reading the reviews, but Neil had already booked it. When they arrived, the old cabin looked exactly like the pictures. If you added about 30 more cobwebs and subtracted most of the structural integrity. The front door creaked like it was auditioning for a horror movie. Inside was a welcome note on the table. "Welcome to Pinehurst Cabin. Please feed the ghost by midnight. Management."
Uh-oh.
Nadine laughed. "That's cute." Andy did not laugh. That's how horror movies start. Neil was already setting up the Wi-Fi password because priorities.
Yeah.
That night, while Neil was watching cat videos, Nadine was making s'mores in the fireplace and Andy was triple checking the locks. They heard it, a low groan echoing through the house. "Old pipes," Neil said. "Wind," Nadine said. "Demonic entity demanding snacks," Andy said. Then the fridge opened by itself. Nadine peeked inside. "Well, whoever it is, they're polite. They're only eating the leftovers." Sure enough, one by one, the slices of pizza began floating out of the fridge. Neil blinked. "Hey, that's my dinner." The ghost dropped one slice in guilt and then spelled something in the air using refrigerator magnets. "Sorry, hungry." The three stared. Nadine, ever the problem solver, said, "You know what? Let's just feed it properly. It's probably just hangry." She microwaved a burrito and set it on the table and said, "Bon appetit, Mr. Ghost." The burrito vanished. A second later, a happy mmm filled the room, followed by the smell of ghostly hot sauce. From that night on, the ghost became part of the group. It turned the kettle on in the morning, played music through the Bluetooth speaker, mostly 80s hits, and once even helped Andy untangle Christmas lights by possessing them. They left a glowing 5-star review. "Super cozy cabin, lovely atmosphere, hauntingly good service. Wi-Fi's great, ghosts are foodie." And under that, the host had replied, "Thanks for feeding Gerald. He gets cranky when people forget."
And he left just speaking.
There's that all about our own Neil, Nadine and Andy. Yeah. Well, I'm out of stories now, guys.
Same.
Shall we go see if we can find someone to pop in and tell us a story?
Mm. Yeah, can do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll pause it and then we can go.
Cook.
I'm recording. Welcome back, guys. We've got a special guest with us. We found Joe in the common room and he has come to read our fourth and final story. All of it.
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
Not part of it, all of it.
He's not getting paid, but he's got to do it.
Okay. You're not going to say hello?
Oh, hello.
He can tell you've
not. I forgot to introduce myself. Shall I start telling the story?
Yeah, you can start.
Okay. Where does it start?
The top. It literally says it started.
Okay. It started as a community initiative. A cheerful flyer pinned to the notice board at the grocery store read, "The Helping Hands Group, making the world a kinder place, one good deed at a time. Volunteers welcome." Chase had seen it first. He'd been restless since the meet, desperate for something to do. When he told Harley, Alice, Harvey and Alex about it, they agreed to check it out. None of them knew what the Helping Hands Group really was. I can imagine that's very true. The meeting was held in an abandoned community centre on the edge of town. Spooky. The lights buzzed weakly overhead, and the air smelled faintly of bleach and mildew.
Both. You're very good at cleaning.
A smiling woman in a faded yellow sweater greeted them at the door. "Welcome," she said. "We're so glad you came. Every hand helps." There were others there, a dozen or so, all wearing the same yellow sweaters. Ooh. None of them spoke. They only watched, smiling too widely, their fingers switching slightly as they were waiting for something.
It's a cult.
Because she's actually a yak.
The first day actually here, it might still be a cult yet.
You never leave.
The group began with team building exercises. The leader, who introduced herself only as Mrs. Hale, asked them to trust their neighbours.
Nadine.
"Hold hands," she said. "Close your eyes. Feel the connection." Chase obeyed. He felt Harley's hand on one side and Alice's on the other. The warmth should have been comforting, but something was wrong. The hand holding his felt wrong. Too cold, too smooth. Ooh. It had too many fingers.
What?
What, like an octopus?
Oh, God.
I was worried they were double-sided. He opened his eyes, and the lights flickered out. When the lights returned, the circle had changed. The smiling volunteers were gone. And so was Mrs. Hale. In their place were a dozen pairs of hands, pale and writhing, crawling across the floor like pale spiders, clutching at ankles. Ooh. And fabric, reaching for skin.
Ooh. I didn't read this one through. Before we put it on air.
Alice screamed as one latched onto her wrist, its grip impossibly strong. Harley tried to pull her free, but the hands clung tighter, bruising her skin. The walls around them pulsed, faint outlines of handprints pressed outward from the inside of the plaster.
What?
They ran, or tried to. The doors were gone. Every hallway ended in another wall covered in hundreds of overlapping handprints. Some small, some enormous, all moving faintly, like something beneath the surface wanted out. I'm not sure where this is going. There's not much left.
Oh my God.
Harvey found a stairwell leading down. The air grew colder, damper. In the basement, they found the sweaters, 100 or more, neatly folded in piles.
Sweaters.
Each bore a stitched name tag. Chase recognised one, Mrs. Hale.
Ooh.
Beneath the sweaters were bones. And beneath the bones, God. The floor itself was made of hams.
I thought you said ham then.
Fused together, grey and waxy, all reaching up. Alex was the last to speak before the light went out again. Her voice trembled.
Oh, no, guys.
This is quite funny. They're called the helping hands because they don't stop. Oh. Then came the noise. Soft, wet, clapping.
How did you do wet clapping?
I presume it's clapping with wet hands. When rescue workers finally found the building months later, the only thing left inside were five new yellow sweaters, folded neatly in a circle. Each one had a name tag stitched in black thread.
Oh, no.
Chase, Harley, Alex, Harvey, and Alex. Alice.
Oh, I got goosebumps.
I'm not really quite sure I understand the story, to be honest, but...
No, I probably should have read that one for you before I gave it to you.
So, the helping hands steal your hands, I think, is the moral of the story.
I mean, we do have an abundance of grey sweatshirts.
Do you have an abundance of hands?
No, not hands yet.
What was it? Pale grey, wet hands?
Wet hands. Ooh, thanks for that, Jack.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Alright, well, I guess we could just sign off now then. We've done all of our spooky stories.
How many have you done?
Four, we did one each.
Yeah.
A lot of stories.
Yeah.
Are they all of that quality?
I think my one was the best.
Was it?
It was about a ghost in an Airbnb that was hungry.
Regarding the laughs, mine was
well, yeah, yours was very funny.
Regarding the laughs.
And Harvey's was really spooky. It was a bit Polar Express-like, wasn't it?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So bye everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy Halloween.